Good morning. The meeting has commenced. Kimberly, please call the roll.
Chair Duggan.
Here.
Vice Chair Abbott.
Here.
Ranking Democratic Member Hunshofsky.
Here.
Representatives Anderson.
Here.
Benjamin. Barrero. Botana. Kennedy.
Here.
Fabricio.
Here.
Franklin.
Present.
Griffiths.
Here.
Keane.
Here.
Flaken.
Here.
Rudman.
Here.
Steele.
Here.
Stevenson.
Here.
Tant.
Here.
Temple.
Here.
Tremont is excused. Woodson.
Here.
We have a quorum.
Thank you. Good morning. This is the January 25th, 2024 meeting of the Insurance and Banking Subcommittee. As a reminder, please silence all electronic devices. A few housekeeping matters to begin the meeting. I want to recognize our newest member, Representative Keane. New to the House, new to the panel. Welcome. We're glad you're here. Would you like to say just a couple of words?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I really lost my voice last night, so I'll be very quiet, but I appreciate the warm welcome that everybody's given me for this first meeting especially. Thank you so much.
Yes, welcome. I'll also recognize Representative Plakin for a special recognition.
Thank you, Chair. I want to recognize the former Rep. Plakin. My husband, Scott, is here today, and the future Rep. Plakin, Gracie.
Welcome to the Florida House. And then lastly, members, at one point I will need to leave to make a bill presentation in another committee. If we're in the middle of the proceedings, I'm just going to hand the gavel to the vice chair and he will take over. I'm not going to stop wherever we are, so just be aware of that. With that, we have several bills on the agenda. We'll get started. Our first bill is HB 1191, Assignment of Benefits for Surplus Lines Insurers, by Representative Fabricio. You are recognized to present your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, ranking member, committee members, vice chair. This is a fairly simple bill. Back in December of 2022, during that special session, we made some changes to property insurance laws and included a prohibition of assignment of benefit claims against the admitted carriers in property insurance claims. What this bill does, it simply applies that change to surplus lines insurance carriers. And that is the bill.
Thank you. Members, any questions on the bill? Seeing none, we have an amendment. Representative, you are recognized to present Amendment 774-229.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The amendment clarifies the intent of the bill, and it confirms that it is not retroactive.
Thank you. Any questions on the amendment? I see none. Do we have any?
None on the amendment.
We have no speaker cards on the amendment. Any debate on the amendment? Seeing none, you're recognized to close on the amendment.
Waive.
Thank you. I see no objection. Show that amendment adopted. We're back on the bill as amended. Public testimony on the bill as amended. Gary Rosen. Wishes to appear. You're recognized.
Hi, I have about 2 minutes, but I also have a detailed, in-depth analysis of what I'm going to talk about, and I guess I'm allowed to hand that out.
No, sir.
You guys leave.
Send it to each member's office, but you're not allowed to use it in the meeting.
I'm not going to use it in the meeting. I'm just showing. Okay. So I'm not allowed to hand it to the people as they leave?
I would recommend you just give it to each of their offices.
Okay.
You're recognized.
Do I have permission to go up there?
Work? Yeah.
Okay, cool. I'll do that. A lot of money to mail it.
Don't worry about that.
Sorry. Okay. There is no reason AOBs should not be eliminated for all Florida insurers. AOBs give contractors too much power. I'm a Florida building contractor and independent insurance adjuster. It's not the AOBs, but it's state-owned citizens, contractors flouting law's standards that's the problem, causing a lot of additional lawsuits and driving out the private sector. That's what go into detail on this. Locke Burke, who's the president and CEO of Security First Insurance, my biggest competitor is Citizens. I can't compete with the government. Eliminating AOBs, followed by SB2-A, has broken the system. The Republican Party is at grave risk due to unhappy homeowners. SB 7052 was to bring back carrier accountability after SB2-A. SB7052 was about requiring carriers to comply with industry standards and state laws. But OIR has not enforced SB7052. I have lodged a whistleblower complaint against OIR for not enforcing SB7052, which is basically comply with industry standards and Florida laws. And my focus is on citizens for only one reason, because they have repeatedly promised in writing compliance with industry standards and Florida laws, but they do not attempt to comply. I invite you to read my handout. I'm going to hand it out a little bit later to bring it to the offices. So again, president of and CEO of Security First Insurance says, my biggest competitor is citizens. I can't compete with the government. That's it.
Thank you. We have no other public testimony cards. Members were in debate.
You want me to get this?
No, thank you. Any debate? The bill is amended. Seeing none, you're recognized to close on your bill.
Thank you, Chairman, and thank you, committee members. Just to be very brief, this bill has nothing to do with citizens' property insurance. This has to do with the surplus lines insurance market, and I'll be very, very brief about it. It's a topic that I'm familiar with and interested in, but my wife glazes over and immediately walks away whenever I talk about the admitted market or surplus lines carriers. So a surplus line carrier is a carrier that is usually out of state, not necessarily out of state, but they underwrite risk that is irregular risk. It's not the standard risk that you normally see from one of the admitted carriers or one of the bigger carriers. So this is a very technical, small change to clarify that the laws that we implemented with regard to AOB, the policy that we implemented with regard to AOB, and that applies to the admitted carriers will also apply to the surplus lines carriers. And members, with that, I close.
Thank you. Kimberly, please call the roll.
Chair Duggan?
Yes.
Vice Chair Abbott?
Yes.
Ranking Democratic Member Honchovsky?
Yes.
Representatives Anderson?
Yes.
Benjamin? Barrero?
Yes.
Botana?
Yes.
Kennedy? Fabricio?
Yes.
Franklin?
Yes.
Griffiths?
Yes.
Keene?
Yes.
Plakin?
Yes.
Rudman?
Yes.
Steele?
Yes.
Stevenson?
Yes.
Tant?
Yes.
Temple?
Yes.
Tremont is excused. Woodson?
Yes.
Thank you. By your action, that bill will be reported favorably. Congratulations, and thank you for your service this weekend at Camp Landing.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, committee.
Members, our second bill is HB 989, Department of Financial Services, by Representative Lamarca. You're recognized to present your bill, recognizing that we have a strike call.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. House Bill 989 is the Department of Financial Services agency bill this year, and the HB 989 streamlines the process of the Department of Financial Services and aims to protect Florida's consumers. Amongst the changes in the bill, it improves the functionality within the My Safe Florida Home program, facilitates swift and decisive action on insurance claims, addresses unlicensed activity in the insurance adjusting space, establishes uniform fire safety standards for emerging technological trends, and ensures that all kinds of unclaimed property are united with its rightful owner. And that is the bill, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, members. We have a strike also. Any questions on the bill? Seeing none, thank you. I appreciate that. Representative, you are recognized to present Amendment 442469.
The amendment, amongst other relevant technical changes, establishes a tax liaison to provide free assistance for Florida's taxpayers on federal issues, and that's the amendment.
All right. Ranking Member Honchovsky, you are recognized for questions on the strike call.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Could you explain what the role is of the tax liaison?
You're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The Department of Revenue currently has a Florida tax advocate that handles Florida-specific tax issues, and many of their calls are federal issues, and this provides a liaison in that space.
Follow up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Is a liaison necessary, or could one just give them the IRS customer care number?
You're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm sure they could just have them call the IRS 1-800 number, but I think Florida wants to provide a little more customer service to our taxpayers.
You're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So we would be paying double. We would be paying somebody to work for the IRS to do this, and we would be paying somebody in the state of Florida to be dealing with a federal matter.
You recognize.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My understanding is the employees are the staff would already be here to provide additional help for somebody in that area, in that space.
Follow up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The reason I'm asking this is there are several bills that impact this department, and then they're requiring, saying they need more staffers. So are you saying that this would be absorbed in the current staff that they have, and there would be no necessity for an additional staffer?
You're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. DOR has a staff. We're not asking for additional funds for federal issues. The staff is at DOR.
Follow up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Has there been any looking into maybe employing AI as a way to supplement staff's work in order to direct people to the proper federal authority for this matter?
You recognize.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I will find out that answer for you, Representative, and get back with you. I know that AI is an emerging technology, and how we use it, I think we have to be very careful, but it's also very beneficial in some ways.
Thank you.
Any other questions on the bills amended? Rep. Woodson? You're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Rep. LaMarca, my question has to do with the part that you have stricken from the bill that has to do with my Safe Florida Home, where the matching grants that used to be made available to local governments and also to the nonprofits organization for projects. That's stricken out from the bill. So I want to know what's the rationale for removing that from the bill.
You're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The local government portion had not been used at this point, where the program has been used directly with homeowners and town homeowners up to this point. You'll also notice there's additional guidelines to help different levels of income first and prioritize seniors. But the funds had not been used at this point, so it was streamlining it, basically.
Follow up?
Yes. If the fund has not been used, you're saying by local government?
Correct.
Every time I look, everything has been used. They have people waiting on the list to get access to the program. And local government is closer to the people, actually, working with them to make sure that they are in compliance with everything. So I don't understand it.
You recognize.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Simply, the program is to assist Florida homeowners, not local governments. The funds were used in such a quick fashion because homeowners applied, homeowners got inspections, and ultimately were awarded grants, and we wiped out the fund. Then post-Hurricane Ian, we had additional funds in special session. This bill streamlines the process where there's additional funds going to be put into it. It's for a homeowner program.
Follow up.
Would you be amenable to have a conversation about this area further? Because what you're telling me is not what I'm getting.
You're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
I wish you had called.
I would always be amenable to having a conversation with you. Having served in local government, city, and county level, I know how close they are to the people. I also know that this program is specifically for Florida's homeowners, but I'm happy to have a conversation with you and work out any concerns you might have.
Because that's very important. Sometimes the people cannot access this. Let's just say they cannot access the state. They can resolve some issues with the local government, and it's good to have them as part of the process. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Any other questions on the bill as amended? Seeing none. Public testimony on the amendment. Rocco Salvatore. The Florida Professional Firefighters wave in support. Thank you. That's all the public testimony we have on the amendment. Debate on the amendment. Ranking Member Hanchowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And there are some good things in this amendment. It was dropped last night. We didn't have a chance. No one spoke to us on this ahead of time, which is always problematic. I have a real concern with this federal tax liaison. If you read any news over the last year or two, statements made by the CFO regarding the IRS, there appears to be some hostility there. And I'm a little concerned that this was dropped last night. No conversation, no heads up ahead of time that this was even coming. And so I'm a little concerned about why it's here, why we are inserting ourselves in federal matters, when I would argue there's plenty for us to do that are state matters in the way we provide customer service to our own residents on our own issues. And because of that and my concerns and not understanding really what the reasoning is for this, I will be voting down today. And I hope in the future when things like this are put in last minute, the night before, that someone would reach out to us and at least give us a heads up so we can have a discussion about it. Thank you.
Further debate on the amendment? Seeing none, you're recognized to close on the amendment.
We close.
Thank you. Without objection, show the amendment adopted. We are back on the bill as, pardon? Without objection, yeah. Show that amendment adopted. We're back on the bill as amended. Any public testimony on the bill as amended? Chase Mitchell, Department of Financial Services, waves in support. Thank you. That's all, excuse me. That's all the public testimony we have on the bill as amended. We're in debate on the bill as amended. Seeing none, you're recognized to close on the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, I appreciate your comments. Representative Hunchowski, I received the amendment probably the same time that you saw it drop. And Representative Woodson, I would just say that if local governments want to create a program like My Safe Florida Home and fund it, I'm happy to work with them on that. This program has been tremendously successful as of the last year, and we are going to continue to try to fund this to the best of our abilities, and I think the grants will probably go very quickly. That being said, that's only part of this bill. It's the agency package, and I appreciate your support.
Thank you. Kimberly, please call the roll.
Chair Duggan?
Yes.
Vice Chair Abbott?
Yes.
Ranking Democratic Member Hunchowski?
No.
Representatives Anderson?
Yes.
Benjamin? Barrero?
Yes.
Botana?
Yes.
Kennedy? Fabricio? Franklin?
No.
Griffiths?
Yes.
King?
No.
Plakin?
Yes.
Rudman?
Yes.
Steele?
Yes.
Stevenson?
Yes.
Tant?
No.
Temple? Yes. Tremont is excused. Woodson?
No.
Thank you. By your action, that bill will be reported favorably. Congratulations.
Thank you.
You are recognized to present the Companion Public Records Bill, HB 991.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Good morning, members. HB 991 provides a public record exemption for a cell phone numbers and licensees and applicants collected by the Department of Financial Services. With growing bad actors in the virtual space, this bill enhanced the protection of sensitive personal information tied to agents' accounts. That is the bill.
Thank you. Any questions on the bill? Seeing none, we have no amendment on the bill. We are in public testimony on the bill. Chase Mitchell, Department of Financial Services, waves in support. Thank you. We have no other public testimony on the bill. Any debate? Seeing none, you're recognized to close on the bill.
We've closed.
Thank you. Kimberly, please call the roll.
Chair Duggan?
Yes.
Vice Chair Abbott?
Yes.
Ranking Democratic Member Hunchowski?
Yes.
Representatives Anderson?
Yes.
Benjamin? Barrero?
Yes.
Botana?
Yes.
Kennedy? Fabricio? Franklin?
Yes.
Griffiths?
Yes.
King?
Yes.
Plakin?
Yes.
Rudman?
Yes.
Steele?
Yes.
Stevenson?
Yes.
Tant?
Yes.
Temple?
Yes.
Tremont is excused. Woodson?
Yes.
Thank you. By your action, that bill will be reported favorably. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Members, our next bill is HB 1569, exemption from regulation for bona fide nonprofit organizations. By Representative Grant, you are recognized to present your bill.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, members. HB 1569 will codify the bona fide nonprofit exemption in statute so that both Habitat for Humanity and the Office of Financial Regulation have certainty around who does and does not qualify for such exemption under federal law, and that is the bill.
Thank you. Questions on the bill? Seeing none, we have an amendment. You are recognized to present Amendment 026541.
Thank you, Chair. This amendment developed collaboratively between the committee staff, the Office of Financial Regulation, and representatives of Habitat for Humanity clarifies OFR's rulemaking authority under the law and more closely aligns the bill with language in federal law with regard to ensuring that only bona fide nonprofits qualify for the exemption and that proper oversight is given to the organization operating under it.
Thank you. Any questions on the amendment? Seeing none, seeing no amendments to the amendment, we're on public testimony on the amendment. Carlicia Collins, Habitat for Humanity of Florida, Inc. Waves in support. Thank you, Carlicia. We have no other public testimony on the amendment. We're in debate on the amendment. Representative Stevenson, you're recognized on the amendment. Okay. All right, seeing no debate on the amendment, you're recognized to close on the amendment.
We've closed.
Okay, thank you. Any objection to the amendment? Seeing none, show that amendment adopted. We are in public testimony on the bill as amended. Carlicia Collins, Habitat for Humanity of Florida, waves in support. Thank you. We have no other public testimony. Any debate on the bill as amended? Representative Stevenson, you're recognized.
I got a note from my Habitat. Thank you for bringing this forward. Everybody knows affordable housing is an issue in Florida, and Habitat does a great job in that space. Thank you, Chair.
Yeah. Further debate? Seeing none, you're recognized to close.
We've closed.
Thank you. Kimberly, please call the roll.
Chair Duggan.
Yes.
Vice Chair Abbott.
Yes.
Ranking Democratic Member Hoshofsky.
Yes.
Representatives Anderson.
Yes.
Benjamin. Barrero.
Yes.
Botana.
Yes.
Kennedy. Fabricio. Franklin.
Yes.
Griffiths.
Yes.
King.
Yes.
Clayton.
Yes.
Rutman.
Yes.
Steele.
Yes.
Stevenson.
Yes.
Tant.
Yes.
Temple.
Yes.
Tremont is excused. Woodson.
Yes.
Thank you. By your action, that bill will be reported favorably. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairman. Thank you, members.
Members, our next bill is HB 1347 by Representative Brackett, Consumer Finance Loans. Mm-hmm. You're recognized to present the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Vice Chair, Ranking Member. Members, HB 1347 is a consumer-focused bill that seeks to help Floridians with obtaining and managing consumer loans by making our state's rate caps competitive with other states, with rates offered in other states, while also increasing regulation of those lenders and increasing protections for consumers. And that is the bill.
Thank you. Questions on the bill? Seeing none, we have no amendments. Seeing no amendments, we are in public testimony on the bill. Tammy Fetchy, Florida Conference of Catholic Bishops, waves in opposition. Jessica Kranak, Florida Retail Federation, waves in support. Scott Jenkins, Florida Financial Services Association, wishes to speak. You're recognized.
I'll just be real brief. We make loans between $0 and $25,000 that, because of the size of the loans, banks don't largely make. We also loan to people that have great credit scores in the 800s, to people that have flawed or no credit history, and we work with those customers, help build a budget for them. Many of them, it's the first time they've had a budget in their lives, so then they can make a, you know, find a monthly payment that fits into their lifestyle. We only approve about 20% of the loans that are applied for. There's only about a default rate of between 5 and 7% average. Our margin's only at about 4%. In the last 2 years, according to OFR, ending in this last November, of the over 300,000 loans we made in that two-year period in Florida, there were only 31 complaints against our kind of lenders in the states. We're generally viewed in most states by their regulators as very good lenders who work with their customers when they meet hard times. With 40% of Americans having less than $400 in savings and 60% having less than $1,000 savings, Floridians need to have more options to get loans when they have emergencies and they need to be able to responsible lending. I'm here for any questions if there are any.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We have no other public testimony. We're in debate. Any debate on the bill? Representative Stevenson, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We had a bill a few years ago that did a pilot program that would have allowed more aggressive lending person to person in the state of Florida. And during that time, I learned a fair amount about this industry. And I wish we didn't have a need for any subprime lending. I really do. But it is an option in our that is, and they're offering more accountability and transparency in this bill. This is a better bill than we've seen. We saw of this bill, I think, last year. It's a better. It has some tiering on the interest rates, and it increases accountability to the state, so we can monitor all the actors. We do have some good actors in the space. I've been out and seen and visited with them, and I will support this bill. And I honestly, like many things, I wish we could put them out of the need. By eliminating the need for them, we could put them out of business. But the banks and credit unions, there's a niche here that doesn't get served. So I will support this bill, and I thank you for bringing it forward. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Further debate? Seeing none, you're recognized to close.
I'll wave close.
Thank you. Kimberly, please call the roll.
Chair Duggan?
Yes.
Vice Chair Abbott?
Yes.
Ranking Democratic Member Honshofsky?
Yes.
Representatives Anderson?
Yes.
Benjamin? Barrero?
Yes.
Botana?
Yes.
Kennedy? Fabricio? Franklin?
Yes.
Griffiths?
Yes.
Keane?
Yes.
Flaken?
Yes.
Rudman?
Yes.
Steele?
Yes.
Stevenson?
Yes.
Tant?
Yes.
Temple?
Yes.
Tremont is excused. Woodson?
Yes.
The bill passes.
Thank you. That bill will be reported favorably. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Members, our next bill is HB 593 by Representative Beltran, misdescription of beneficiaries and banks. You're recognized.
Thank you, Chairman, and thank you, committee, for hearing this bill. This bill requires banks to name match the wire transfers that they receive in order to prevent fraud. So it requires, if you send a wire and you give an account number and you give a name of a person or a company, it requires the bank that receives that wire to check and make sure that the number that's given matches the name on the account to make sure that the money is properly credited. The purpose of this bill is to prevent various types of frauds that can be committed when somebody induces somebody to make a transfer to a particular account number, even though they don't own that entity or they are not that entity, and in fact the bank account is not in the name that the person thinks that they are sending the wire to. And that is the bill.
Thank you. Any questions? Representative Steele, you're recognized.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you for bringing this great bill. Is this also for international wires?
You're recognized.
Yes. Thank you for the question. It would apply to international wires, and it would require, if you go into a SunTrust or a Wells Fargo or a Bank of America in Florida, that they make arrangements with the beneficiary bank, that is the bank that the money is being wired to ensure that that bank name matches. And if they don't make those arrangements, then the it's called the receiving bank, although they're the bank that you go to send the money. So the nomenclature of the UCC is kind of confusing, but they're required to do that, or else they bear risk of loss.
Follow up? Right, thank you. All right, seeing no further questions, you are recognized to present Amendment 935729.
Thank you, Chairman. This amendment isn't, I drafted some language that was intended to essentially create sort of a comparative fault scheme. I realized when speaking to staff and looking at the bill again, it probably created more confusion than help, and I don't want there to be, I mean, it's a very, the bill, the idea of the bill itself is if you name match, then everything's fine. If you don't name match, then you bear the risk of loss. I didn't think we needed this kind of comparative fault scheme, so I was removing it to avoid confusion. That's the amendment.
Thank you. Questions on the amendment? Seeing none, there are no amendments to the amendment. There's no public testimony on the amendment. Debate on the amendment? Seeing none, you're recognized to close on the amendment.
I wave closed, Chairman.
Right. Any objection to the amendment? Seeing none, show the amendment adopted. We are on public testimony on the bill as amended. Kenneth Pratt, Florida Bankers Association, wishes to speak. You're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and members. And first, let me apologize to Rep. Beltran because we haven't had a chance to connect with you on this bill. I think we have an appointment with your office on Tuesday, so looking forward to coming to talk with you more, coming to your office and talking to you more about this bill. We have had an opportunity last week to relay some of our concerns and issues to the insurance and banking staff, and I'm not going to go through the there's some line items that and some lines that we've talked about, but I'm not going to go into those today. Just want to say that it does take away some of the valuable protections for banks and add some additional burdens, and those are our concerns. We recognize the intent of the bill is certainly a good one. We want to prevent wire fraud as well, and so looking forward to working with Rep. Beltran on this to get in the right position. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. There's no further public testimony on the bill as amended. Any debate on the bill? Representative Tan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't have any problem with this bill. I do want to encourage you to continue to work with the Florida Bankers Association, but I think this is an issue that needs to be addressed, and I appreciate the fact that you're bringing this bill. I have a local banker who has presented in multiple forums about bank fraud, about wire fraud, and about bank fraud, and so I'm really grateful for your bringing this bill. Thank you.
Thank you. Further debate on the bill as amended? Seeing none, you're recognized to close.
Thank you, Chairman. I appreciate Mr. Pratt's comments. I certainly welcome him to reach out at any time and discuss any concerns or any improvements we can make to the bill. I'll just point out this is the provision of the UCC we're amending is from 1989. We didn't have very good computers in 1989. We didn't have artificial intelligence. I've spoken to bank lawyers who say this happens hundreds of times a day at the big banks. So certainly I think the cost of or any burden of this protection is well worth it, that you don't have hundreds of wires being scammed at each bank each day. And so the way it's drafted now is it almost codifies that the banks can knowingly not name match. It almost codifies negligence on the part of the banks. And so that's why I felt I needed to bring this bill, but I certainly welcome ideas to improve the bill, to make it easier to administer, and, of course, most importantly, to prevent fraud. With that, I close.
Thank you. Kimberly, please call the roll.
Chair Duggan.
Yes.
Vice Chair Abbott.
Yes.
Ranking Democratic Member Honshofsky.
Yes.
Representatives Anderson.
Yes.
Benjamin. Barrero.
Yes.
Botana.
Yes.
Kennedy. Fabricio. Franklin.
Yes.
Griffiths.
Yes.
Keene.
Yes.
Flaken.
Yes.
Rudman.
Yes.
Steele.
Yes.
Stevenson.
Yes.
Tant.
Yes.
Temple.
Yes.
Tremont is excused. Woodson.
Yes.
Thank you. That bill will be reported favorably. Congratulations.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Committee.
Members, our next bill is HB 1031, Debt Relief Services, by Representative Buchanan. You are recognized to present the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Good morning, committee members. HB 1031 differentiates debt settlement services from Florida credit counseling services in Florida statute. That is the bill, and there is a strike all.
Thank you. Questions on the bill? Seeing none, you are recognized to present Amendment 031595.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members, this strike all merely clarifies the intent and provides a more accurate description of what debt settlement services providers are, and the language exempts debt settlement services from credit counseling statute. That is the amendment.
Thank you. Questions on the amendment? Seeing none, I see no amendments to the amendment. We have no public testimony on the amendment. Any debate on the amendment? Seeing none, you're recognized to close on the amendment.
Waive close.
Thank you. Any objection to the adoption of the amendment? Seeing none, show that amendment adopted. Any public testimony on the... There's no public testimony on the bill as amended. Any debate? Seeing none, you're recognized to close on the...
Waive close.
All right, thank you. Kimberly, please call the roll.
Chair Duggan.
Yes.
Vice Chair Abbott.
Yes.
Ranking Democratic Member Honshofsky.
Yes.
Representatives Anderson.
Yes.
Benjamin. Barrero.
Yes.
Botana. Kennedy, Fabricio, Franklin,
yes,
Griffiths,
yes,
Keene,
yes,
Flaken,
yes,
Rudman,
yes,
Steele,
yes,
Stevenson,
yes,
Tant,
yes,
Temple,
yes,
Tremont is excused, Woodson,
yes.
Thank you. That bill will be reported favorably. Congratulations.
Thank you, Chair.
Members, our next bill is HB 161, Payments of Healthcare Providers and Surgical Procedures Under Workers' Compensation, by Representative Daly. You are recognized to present the bill.
Morning, Chair, Vice Chair, Ranking Member, Committee Members. Good morning. House Bill 161 increases the reimbursement of workers' compensation physician services to 200% of Medicare for all services. That's up from the current 110%. The current level is the lowest in the nation and has not been increased in 20 years. This bill also updates the reimbursement for expert witness fees for medical experts from $200 to $300 per hour. This change would align the hourly rate to that paid by the Division of Workers' Compensation for their own medical experts. And that is the bill, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Questions? I see no questions. You are recognized to present Amendment 824961.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The amendment simply changes the number from 200% to 150% across the board.
Thank you. Questions on the amendment? Representative Stevenson, you're recognized.
Thank you, Chair. Do you know how much this change will reduce the impact to the workers' comp, the projected impacts to the workers' comp rates? Because there was a projection of 7.63% in the bill analysis.
You're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Rep. Stevenson, I'd love to talk with you offline about it. I don't know the exact number. I think it's still a moving target, especially with the amendment.
Further questions on the amendment? Seeing none, there are no amendments to the amendment. Any public testimony on the amendment? There is none. Any debate on the amendment? Representative Rudman, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Daley. I heard you say earlier that our current reimbursement rates for workers' comp are the lowest in the nation. I think I made it known last session that I personally haven't taken workers' comp in over 17 years because of those rates. I much prefer 200% to 150%, but I'll still be up on the amendment, and thank you for doing what you're doing.
Further debate? Representative Stevenson.
Thank you, and I mentioned at our last meeting how hard it is to get a decent specialist in this space, and I do hope that we provide enough that we can have good help to get our workers back, because from what I experienced, it was pretty slim pickings. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Further debate on the amendment? Seeing none, you're recognized to close on the amendment. Thank you. Any objection to the adoption of the amendment? Seeing none, show the amendment adopted. We are in public testimony on the bill as amended. Larry Halperin, Florida Orthopedic Society. Doctor, you're recognized.
Good morning, Chair and committee members. My name is Larry Halperin. I've been a board-certified surgeon at Orlando Orthopedic Center for over 30 years. I served as Chief of Orthopedics at Lucerne Hospital, on the Board of Directors of the American Academy of Orthopedic Surgeons, as Vice President of the Orange County Medical Society, and I'm the immediate past President of the Florida Orthopedic Society, which represents over 1,000 Florida orthopedic surgeons. Orthopedic injuries comprise 80% of workers' compensation, we believe. The workers' compensation system in Florida is in crisis. Simply put, there are not enough physicians willing to treat injured workers. I recently requested a rheumatology consult on a workers' compensation patient. Over a month later, I learned there are no local rheumatologists willing to see the patient. In a month or two, this Orlando patient will see someone in Jacksonville. I was recently told by a carrier that a patient was noncompliant and refused to go to a consult I ordered. I subsequently found out the patient refused because he didn't want to travel 100 miles. I often hear things like, we can't find a vascular surgeon who will take workers' compensation patients. I practice in Orange County. I see many patients, comp patients, from Volusia, Brevard, Polk, Lake, and occasionally Sumter counties. Often the patients ask why they have to drive so far. I believe it's because many doctors in these counties will not see comp patients at the current payment schedule. These situations are the norm. They happen frequently. I understand you heard similar concerns about excessive delays in treatment from our first responders last week. The problem is real. I'm certain that if each representative sought feedback from your constituents about the promptness of their workers' compensation care, you would be unpleasantly surprised at the results. The reason is simple. It's been 20 years since the legislature increased the fee schedule. What business can run with flat payment for 20 years? Especially one like medicine, with the increasing regulatory and EMR costs on top of inflation. It leaves Florida with the lowest comp reimbursement rate of any state and the lowest workers' compensation physician participation rate. Workers' compensation is one of the toughest arenas in which to treat patients. There are added and costly administrative burdens due to delays in authorization and excessive paperwork. There are restrictions to providing care such as advanced imaging, physical therapy, medications, and durable medical goods. I frequently wait months for authorization to do surgery. My critical post-op therapy is often delayed, prematurely terminated, or never approved. There's a study by Brinker in the Journal of Bone and Joint Surgery. The total orthopedic practice expense per episode of care for a workers' compensation patient is twice as much as a Medicare patient. Florida fee schedule poses a challenge recruiting orthopedic surgeons to the state. Why practice here when you can practice in another state and be paid twice what Florida docs are paid? I've heard it said that Florida comp already pays more than Medicare. What's the problem? Medicare payment has also been flat for 20 years. How do you run a business like that? Docs are starting to drop Medicare payments. Practices are selling out to hospitals and private equity. Paying a bit more than Medicare does not mean you're well paid. Given the increased burden of the comp system, it is not an adequate incentive to see these patients. We're seeking an increase in reimbursement. We anticipate there will also be some savings not contemplated in the current projections. Expanded access can reduce the time injured workers are out of work and result in injuries being treated in a timely manner before they get more complex or result in more significant disability. I've seen countless workers' compensation fractures and tendon lacerations, often from other counties, weeks after the injury. This complicates their treatment. Workers' compensation premiums have gone down about 80% since 2003. Perhaps it's time for Florida to invest some of those savings to improve patient care. People who are injured on the job can't sue their employer. In exchange for that protection, workers' compensation is supposed to provide prompt, complete, and quality care for the injured worker. I hope it's time to take a step closer to that promise. Finally, we appreciate the process and support the amendment adopted today. We believe, however, that the smaller increase in the amendment will not address the crisis in a meaningful way. We look forward to continuing to work with you and see if we can pass a bill that will increase timely care for injured workers. Thank you, Representative Daley, for this good legislation, and thank you to the committee and the chairman for listening to me today.
Thank you, Dr. Halpern. Our next speaker, Jeff Scott, Florida Medical Association waves in support. Thank you. Our next speaker, Richard Chait, Florida Workers Advocates, wishes to speak. You're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Thank you, Rep. Daley. Thank you for your access, all of you. I'm a 36-year practitioner in the field of workers' compensation. I've handled both sides of the aisle, but for the last 32 years, I've focused on the representation of injured workers. Because the workers' compensation system is so complex, specifically for the last 8 years, I've dedicated my career to the legislative process, and the Florida Workers Advocates has retained me as the Director of Legislative Affairs. This bill is good public policy for the workers' comp system. The Florida Workers Advocate strongly supports it, with the caveat that Rep. Stevenson brought up in her questioning. Anytime that there's been change systemically in the workers' compensation system, there is a ripple effect, okay? And we have to approach that with eyes wide open. But that ripple effect, which could in fact result in an increase in workers' compensation premiums for Florida businesses, does not necessarily signify a crisis in the workers' compensation system. We heard our orthopedic surgeon testify. I'll be a little bit more specific. Since 2003, the workers' compensation rates have cumulatively declined 77.7%. Most recently, the Office of Insurance Regulation issued for this coming year, 2024, a 15.1% decrease in workers' comp rates. In my 8 years of being devoted as the Director of Legislative Affairs, I have not enjoyed a rate decrease that significant. Equally as important is that they testified at the OIR hearing through the actuary of NCCI that they expected a rate decrease for 2025 of an additional 3.5%. Now, if the cost analysis that we all saw prior to the amendment was that there was an anticipated 7.3% cost to the system as a result of the bill before amended, but at the same time, we contemplate what was testified to at the OIR hearing, that they already anticipated a 3.5% rate decrease, and we've enjoyed rate declines, I would submit the public policy in support of this bill outweighs any risk. We need better doctors. We are seeing doctors leaving the system. We are seeing doctors not wanting to get into the system. And I am a firm advocate that by bringing quality healthcare into the system, we are going to expedite treatment, We are going to facilitate recovery, and we are going to deliver our injured workers back to the employers so that they don't have the business interruption. So eyes wide open, but respectfully, I'd ask you all to support the good public policy of this bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chait. We have no other public testimony on the bill. We're in debate. Debate on the bill. Dr. Redmond, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Once again, Rep. Daly, I just want to commend you for what you're doing in the workers' comp space. You know, obviously, as a physician, as I said earlier, I can testify on your behalf that the workers' comp system is, in fact, broken. If anyone needs any further proof of that, you know, we have a member who's currently going through the workers' comp process themselves, and I'm sure they would be willing to come in and testify as well that it is not a very efficient system. Just in the interest of education, just so people know that when you ask for those reimbursement rate increases, you know, 200% sounds like a lot. You know, even 150% sounds like a lot. And just to be perfectly clear how this works, when I charge a fee for my service, let's say I charge somebody $100, Medicare will come in and they'll say, we don't care what your bill says. You say $100, we're paying you $50. And people may ask, why don't you renegotiate that? There is no negotiation with the federal government. I encourage anyone to try and negotiate with the federal government. So when they say 50, that's what we get, even though we're making a loss with each patient we see. So by going to 150% reimbursement, that's a good start. I appreciate it. I wish we could do even more, but again, it's a good start. It's probably not enough to make me start seeing workers' comp again. As the physicians are saying, it's very, very hard to entice physicians to see workers' comp, because not only is it poor reimbursement, it's all kinds of red tape. It's all kind of paperwork. If you want to drive a physician crazy, give us more paperwork to do. So I look forward to working with you in future sessions and future bills to help shore up the workers' comp system. And thank you for your good bill.
Further debate? I'll just add, I appreciate your efforts to champion this issue. And the entire time that I've been here. So with that, you're recognized to close.
Thank you, Chair, and I will briefly. I usually waive, but members, and thank you for your comments and the conversation this morning. You know, workers' comp is an agreement, right? It is an agreement with the worker and the business owner to say, hey, we're going to forego our traditional access, the traditional kind of litigation route when I'm hurt on the job, but in exchange, I would like adequate care and adequate access to care, and that is some of what we're struggling with the system as it exists today, because as you've heard from some of the folks who have testified, you can't get it, right? You can't find that specialist. You can't find that individual, certainly in a reasonable range from where you live. And you've also heard Doc Rudman mention that workers' comp is an onerous burden already. There are a bunch of extra hoops to jump through when it comes to taking a workers' comp patient. And so when you tie that with the stagnant pay, nobody really wants to do it, and you've heard that as well. So, Dr. Rudman, I agree with you. I think 200% would be better. My hope is to revisit it, but I think this is definitely a step in the right direction. As you heard me mention in the opening, we are currently the lowest in the country, and 200% takes us to about the middle. 150 is probably better than we are today, certainly, and a step in the right direction. But is it going to move mountains? I don't know yet. And I'll leave you with one example. And I was speaking with some of the orthopedic surgeons, and they mentioned a gentleman practices in Florida and Georgia. So simple on-the-job wrist injury, right? Has to have surgery. He's able to charge. He's able to get paid $1,300 in Georgia, $600 in Florida. And he uses that as an example of why it is so hard to get people to take workers' comp cases, to get physicians to come to Florida. So I certainly believe this is a bill that is in a step in the right direction. I want to thank the chair. Thank you for your leadership. Thank you for your help. Thank you to your staff and your team for helping make this happen. And with that, I'd ask for your favorable support.
Thank you. Kimberly, please call the roll.
Chair Duggan.
Yes.
Vice Chair Abbott.
Yes.
Ranking Democratic Member Hoshofsky.
Yes.
Representatives Anderson.
Yes.
Benjamin. Barrero.
Yes.
Botana.
Yes.
Kennedy. Fabricio. Franklin.
Yes.
Griffiths.
Yes.
Keene.
Yes.
Clayton.
Yes.
Rudman.
Yes.
Steele.
Yes.
Stevenson.
Yes.
T- Cant?
Yes.
Temple? Tremont is excused. Woodson?
Yes.
Thank you. By your action, that bill will be reported favorably. Congratulations. Members, our last bill is HB 659 by Vice Chair Abbott. Health Plans, you are recognized to present the bill from your seat.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, members. HB 659 seeks to require certain items be present on an insurer identification card. First, the letters FL on the card to identify it as a state-regulated plan, and a QR code that takes the insured directly to Division of Consumer Services within the Department of Financial Services that will help the insured find help with issues or they may have with their insurance. Second, the bill requires that state-regulated plans participate in the statewide provider and health plan claim dispute resolution program. That is the bill.
Thank you. Questions on the bill? Representative Redmond, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Rep. Abbott, thank you for your bill. I know in the materials that I've read, it's being kind of promoted as a transparency issue for consumers. Are you getting any feedback from providers as well? Because I would think it would also be good transparency for providers as well.
You're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, we have. Providers, especially on the part where we're requiring the state-regulated plans to participate in the claim dispute program, it provides another access point to maybe seek arbitration at a lower cost to see if they can come to resolution over claim disputes.
Follow up. Rep. Franklin, you're recognized.
Yeah, thank you so much, Mr. Chair. And I heard you mention also state-regulated plans. That's all Medicaid, commercial, across the board, just no federally regulated plans, it sounds like.
You're recognized.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair. So currently, the Medicaid managed care plans are already mandated to participate in it, but the state-regulated plans are not. On the federal plans, there is already a federal process.
Follow-up. Further questions? Seeing none, there are no amendments. We are in public testimony. Tony Large, Florida College of Emergency Physicians and Florida Society of Rheumatology, waves in support. Thank you. Jeff Scott, Florida Medical Association, waves in support. Thank you. That's all the public testimony that we have. Any debate? Representative Redmond.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Abbott, you know, I commend you for working on this bill. You know I'm a big supporter of this bill. Anything that improves transparency, not just for the consumers, but also for the providers as well, you know I'm going to be a supporter of. You know, I've got my own Florida Blue Card right here in front of me, here at my desk, and I'm looking at my card. I can tell people from a provider perspective, it's not as simple as calling your doctor, you know, and they're going to ask, well, what's your insurance? You know, and most of you guys say, well, I have Blue Cross. What you don't know is there's about 25 different versions of Blue Cross. You know, there's good Blue Cross, which is thankfully what we have. There's Blue Cross HMO products, which a lot of physicians don't take. There's Medicare Advantage plans, you know, so it's almost like a form of Medicare that Blue Cross runs. And then, of course, there's Medicaid HMOs as well. So it's never as simple as the patient just pulling their card out of their wallet and say, oh, I've got Blue Cross, because that really doesn't mean anything to our office. Matter of fact, my office, we lose a lot of money every year because my staff will bring somebody in with the understanding that, okay, they say they have a Blue Cross product that we accept, and then when we go to file the claim, we find out, oh, wait, that was an HMO. We don't accept that. So again, anything that improves transparency, not just for the consumer, but for the provider as well, that has to be good. And so again, I'm all for transparency. Thank you so much, Rep. Abbott, and I'll definitely be an up on your bill. Thank you.
Further debate? Seeing none, Vice Chair, you're recognized to close.
I'll wave close.
Thank you. Kimberly, please call the roll. We are on HB 659.
Chair Duggan?
Yes.
Vice Chair Abbott?
Yes.
Ranking Democratic Member Honshofsky?
Yes.
Representatives Anderson?
Yes.
Benjamin? Barrero?
Yes.
Botana?
Yes.
Kennedy? Fabricio? Franklin?
Yes.
Griffiths?
Yes.
Keene?
Yes.
Flaken?
Yes.
Rudman?
Yes.
Steele?
Yes.
Stevenson?
Yes.
Tant?
Yes.
Temple? Tremont is excused. Woodson?
Yes.
The bill passes.
Thank you. By your action, that bill will be reported favorably. Congratulations. Members, that concludes our bills for this agenda. We are now privileged to have a presentation on Citizens Property Insurance Corporation from Tim Cirio, the President, Executive Director, and CEO. You're recognized. Thank you, Mr. Cirio. Welcome.
To brief you all this morning about the status of Citizens and to share what I believe is some good news about what we're seeing in the Florida property insurance market. As I believe most of you know, Citizens has a clear mandate under Florida Statute 627.351 to charge actuarially sound rates and to be non-competitive with the private market. This is critically important. Currently, also, as most of you know, our rates for the most part are actually 30 to 40% below market around in most areas around the state. This is why recently we've sought the maximum increases allowed under law. And unsound rates means there could be less surplus to pay claims and therefore an increased risk of assessments on Floridians who aren't even Citizens policyholders. So the key takeaway there is we will always be able to pay claims, and that's good for Citizens customers. But our strategies and what we're trying to do, and I know what the legislature has tried to accomplish, is we want to be actuarially sound so that risk of assessment, the need to rely on assessment authority to pay claims, is limited. And I'll discuss that more in a bit. The glide path, which is a statutory limit to our rate increases, it continues to be an ongoing and frankly, an artificial impediment to Citizens becoming actuarially sound. And us being able to charge, again, actuarially sound rates is critical to market recovery. As long as Citizens' rates remain artificially low, we are going to continue to hamper competition and hamper the speed of market recovery. And as Florida's residual insurer, we should never be competing with the private market, and that's exactly what we're doing. This is fundamentally unfair to policyholders in the private market. Approximately 87% of Florida policyholders are in the private market. Our market share is now about 17%. And that's unfair to them, and they're already, for the most part, paying higher rates. They've absorbed more frequent rate increases over the years, and again, they still face the risk of assessment if there is a catastrophic storm. So again, some good news. To promote our ability to pay claims with minimal restrictions and to minimize the risk of assessments on Florida policyholders, we have combined, thanks to authority you all gave us, the legislature gave us, we have combined our three primary account, our three accounts, our coastal account, our personal lines account, and our commercial account. And this is good stewardship on our part, we believe. And to just briefly explain, under our old structure, if surplus of in one account was exhausted, even if there was plenty of surplus in the other two accounts, a surcharge on policyholders, perhaps even an emergency assessment on policyholders and non-policyholders would have been triggered. By combining these accounts and pooling the surplus, the risk of an assessment is significantly reduced because the overall lower risk, because of the overall lower risk that the surplus will be depleted. So, for instance, last year we projected we would have to levy a surcharge on Citizens policyholders if there was a 1-in-4-year storm. Now that we've combined the accounts, it would take a 1-in-95-year event to trigger a surcharge. And to provide some context, Andrew was a 1-in-43-year event. Ian was a probably a 1-in-25, 1-in-30-year event. So again, we do want to thank you for giving us that authority, and we're trying to do our best to minimize the risk of assessments on Floridians while still being available to policyholders who need us, or consumers in the market who have nowhere else to go who need us and need to become policyholders. So I've spoken about our rates and how they compare to the private market and how our rates can play a part in avoiding or increasing the risk of an assessment, but also our rates can adversely impact the success of depopulation efforts. The smaller Citizens policy count, the less exposure we have, and the less the likelihood of an assessment on Florida policyholders after a CAT event. That's another reason why depop is so important. If our rates are actuarially unsound and priced below market, it's much harder for a good company to come in and offer comparable coverage because the economics just simply don't work. And that's bad for all Floridians. So with that background, I will take a few minutes to to share some additional positive signs of good developments in the market as a result of the reforms passed by the legislature and supported by the CFO and the governor. This first slide shows where we are today as a residual insurer or the insurer of last resort. In Florida, in large part because of the glide path, we've had massive fluctuations in our PIF count as there are changes in the health or lack of health in the market. Take a look at this. This is Citizens compared to other state residual carriers around the country. These are the top seven state residual carriers with the highest exposure in residual markets throughout the U.S. Florida is the largest with over half of the national exposure. And to be clear, we're only showing the top seven carriers, but when the chart says we have 51% of the total exposure, that's out of all the residual carriers in the country, not just the top seven. I believe there are about 43 carriers. As a comparison, our next largest is California. They have less than a quarter of our number of policies and half of our exposure. However, what we have seen, we've had tremendous depopulation activity in 2023. In 2023, we had about 275,000 policies that were assumed by the private market. That is a sure sign of recovery, and the capital is beginning to flow back into the market. And that's also much more than all the I know that's a higher figure than all the takeouts from 2016 to 2022 combined. We were forecasting last year to end 2023 with about 1.7 million policies and about $675 billion in total exposure. We wound up ending the year at 1.23 million policies and $553 billion in exposure. So that was some very good news. For the year end 2024, we're currently projecting about the removal of about 338 policies into the private market and hopefully a reduction in about $185 billion in total insured value to be removed, all of that through depopulation. And frankly, we're trying to work on some strategies to even exceed those numbers.
Mr. Cirio?
Yes, sir.
You said 338 policies. Did you mean 338,000?
Oh, no, my mistake. Yeah, 338,000 policies. Yes. Thank you for that clarification, Mr. Chair. That would be a very disappointing outcome. So, we're working on strategies to even exceed those numbers. So because of the growth of Citizens, we do have a lot of good policies in our portfolio right now, as some of these companies last couple of years have failed. But because of that, we're seeing that the market is very interested. And again, I've got a chart later that shows how those policies are distributed. But there is interest in takeouts because, frankly, there is good business in the Citizens portfolio that belongs in the private market. And again, our goal is to get down to that policy level where we are truly a residual market. We're truly there for people who have objectively properties that the private market for a lot of reasons just would not be interested in. Maybe it's location, maybe they're on the coast, and that's where we should be. And I've said this before, my CFO and I sort of argue over that. That sweet spot would be, you know, anywhere from a couple hundred thousand, maybe 400,000. We were at our lowest, I believe, in 2018, and I think we were about 425,000 policies. We'd love to be at that level again. So these pie charts show how the types of insurers writing in Florida have shifted over basically three time periods. You have the 04-05 storms on the left, right after the 04-05 storms. This is June of 04. The next pie chart is December 31, 2011, when Citizens was at its peak size, and then the latest data we have from September of 2023. So the left is before, not after the 04-05 storms. That's that June date. And you can see there's a relatively strong market. The yellow areas are the PUPs. Those are the national insurers that have created Florida businesses, subsidiaries, to do business here to protect their parent companies. And their share went from about 35% down to 15% currently. Blue, that's Citizens. At our peak in 2011, we were at 23% of the market. And as I referenced earlier, we're now about 17% of the market in Florida. Orange is critically important. Orange are the Florida domestic insurers, insurers who predominantly write only in Florida. They have grown from 22% in that June 04 time period to now they're more than half of the market today, 53% of the market. And green are the national carriers. They were 28% and they're now 15% of our market share. Now, most of you know we've had a tremendous growth in our commercial lines policies. That is a point of concern for us. 99% of our policies come from personal lines, meaning homeowners, condo unit owners, tenants, et cetera. The remaining 1% comes from commercial lines policies, which is shown in this graph. However, commercial lines make up 20% of our total insured value, and it continues to grow at a concerning rate. These are commercial residential buildings such as condo associations, as well as commercial non-residential buildings such as offices or retail stores. The commercial residential are in blue bars, and the commercial non-residential are represented in the yellow or gold bars. 94% of our commercial business is commercial residential, meaning condo associations, essentially. That 94% represents 94% of our total insured value. The TIV, the total insured value, has grown exponentially in 2023, and it's comparable, if you look, it's comparable to our 2013 rates. However, the building count is much, much lower. And that is because right now we have a much, much higher cost of replacement, just because of increased cost of replacement and increased construction cost, et cetera. So that's what we're dealing with now. And the good news here is that we have had, for the first time, a commercial DPOP that's going to happen. It's planned for February, and we hope that there are going to be some more to announce shortly. More signs of recovery. The Office of Insurance Regulation has approved 7 property insurance companies. 4 of them are domesticating in Florida: Mainsail, Tail Row, Orion 180 Select, Orange Insurance Exchange, Republic Fire and Casualty, Condo Owners Reciprocal Exchange, and Trusted Resource Exchange. 12 companies last year participated in depopulation, again, with over 275,000 policies assumed by the industry. This month alone, in January, we're projecting another 76,000 policies will be assumed by the private market. There are companies expanding their policy, their writing in Florida: Universal, State Farm, Olympus, and American Integrity. Good news on the litigation front, too. Our non-catastrophic claims litigation count has dropped by 20% compared to 2022, and we're hearing that litigation in the private industry is declining as well. And for reinsurance is very critical. Reinsurance is a sort of a barometer of what these, you know, worldwide reinsurers, how they view the Florida market. I will tell you that prior to June 1, the June 1 renewals, which account for most of the private market, that's when most of them occurred, there were concerns that some domestic carriers were not going to be able to fulfill their required reinsurance coverages. And that would just, the bottom line is that would lead to more insolvencies. And the good news was that did not happen. They were able to meet their reinsurance needs. There was more capacity than was forecasted in the market. The pricing was up, but it wasn't up as much as we had thought. And what we're hearing, we knock on wood, we think 2024 will be even more successful in the reinsurance market. This is frankly a bit of an odd graph, but these are the latest financials for select private carriers that we monitor in Florida, and we're trying to compare apples to apples. So we're looking at third quarter results in 19, 20, 2021, 2022, and 2023. The latest underwriting losses, there are still underwriting losses, but the latest losses have declined significantly. Latest underwriting losses declined by 55% compared to 2022, and the latest income losses have declined by 77% compared to 2022. This is the first year the underwriting and income losses decreased from the previous year in quite a while, which is very, very good news. And we're hoping the 2023 year-end results will be even better. Direct written premium has continued to increase since 2013, where the latest year, 2023, the increase was about 13%. That is likely due to rate increases. And contributed capital in 2021 and 22 stand out as the highest. For the last year, it's significantly lower, and a lower need for contributed capital means that these companies are experiencing fewer excess losses. That is good news. And again, much of this is attributable to a reduction in all the reduction in excessive litigation and the associated expenses. These are a number of policies assumed throughout through the depopulation program in 2023, and you can see the distribution. We're over 275,000 policies were assumed by the industry. The top five counties for DPOP activity were Broward, Miami-Dade, Palm Beach, Pasco, and Hillsborough. And this is good news because the industry tends to avoid these areas. And since the new laws came into effect, where policies have been deemed ineligible to remain in Citizens because maybe the offer was within 20% of what they're currently paying in Citizens, 81,000 policyholders received offers with renewal premiums that were less than what they pay in Citizens. And that is really, really good news. What we think is happening is that these insurers, you know, when they're expending their capital and they have to figure out what their business model needs are, where does it make sense to take policies, they're spending their time trying to, you know, pick policies in different regions of the state that match their portfolio, and they are able to find policies where maybe in some of the areas of the state where we are closer to actuarially sound rates, they are able to do this. So we've been pleased with that success. It's been great news, and I think it bodes well for the future. So the January DPOP policies, again, assumed were over 76,000 policies. Out of that, that's what we're projecting. The total policies that we've seen so far with a premium less than the Citizens premium is about 25% of those, a little over 19,000 policies. And then the rest of the policies that are equal with the Citizens premium or above up to 20%, within that 20% range, is about 67%. So it does seem like, you know, not to use this phrase, we use it too much nowadays, sharpening their pencils. These insurers are sharpening their pencils, and they're really trying to dig in and understand the data and make good business decisions. And again, you can see with the distribution too, all of the, you know, when Citizens, if we ever get back down to that 400,000, 450,000 range, you will see far less of a distribution of policies. They'll probably be concentrated more in South Florida, the Bay Area, and Orlando. But with the broader distribution, again, that shows that there's a broader portfolio for companies to come in and choose from and figure out what matches with their business needs and to make it, you know, to deploy capital in a way that's good for the policyholder and good for the company. Historical DPOP activity. So this gives the historical perspective for depopulation, which is important to understand where it seems we're heading. So the blue bars represent the percent of assumed policies relevant to total policy count for 1 year. And the green bars represent the percentage of total insured value relevant to the total insured value for the whole year. 2011 is when Citizens was at its largest, and as you can see, the high DPOP occurred between 2012 and 2016, resulting in Citizens becoming more of that true residual carrier or insurer of last resort. Last year's DPOP behaved similar to 2013, so if that's an indicator, we're expecting and hoping this year and in the next few years we're going to continue to have significant DPOP activity again, as the market continues to recover because of the reforms passed by the legislature. This chart shows the results of a successful DPOP. These are the monthly end policy counts where the last bar is as of January 19, 2024, and it's been adjusted to forecast the projected 76,000 assumed policies by the market. Non-CAT litigation and assignment of benefits rates. This final table shows our personal lines non-catastrophe claims data broken out by accident year for the percent of claims that went into litigation as well as claims that had a related assignment of benefits. So Citizens litigation percentage decreased in the last several years, even before the reforms, because we you know, it, sort of not at a great rate, but we were trying to implement strategies that would help reduce that litigation and the litigation exposure, maybe through our managed repair program or the appraisal process. So just different strategies. The drastic reduction in AOB happened in 2023, and it's related to Senate Bill 2A. You can see the reduction in litigation and the reduction in the use of AOB. And again, one of the things I wanted to point out, and forgive me because I know most of you appreciate this, the law went into effect in December of 2022. However, the way under prior case law, and frankly, the way the bill itself was drafted to account for the case law, if there's a loss, the new law wouldn't go into effect right after the statute became effective. What had to happen is the statute had to become effective, then the policy had to renew. The renewed policy is under the new legislative, falls under the new law and the new legislative mandates. So you had to have the policy renewed, most of them in June of 2023. Then you would have to have a loss after that renewal where the new assignment of benefits and attorney's fees and other restrictions would apply. So I anticipate that in 2024, the data showing the litigation reforms, it's going to be even better. So these 2023 numbers really won't capture the full scope of the reforms. Again, the wonderful work of the legislature this past session has been a tremendous help to citizens. We're confident that things are moving in the right direction. This week spoke to reinsurers from Bermuda and London. They seem to be very optimistic. I mean, they're serious business people. They want to continue to see good data, but we've got very good signs for the 2024 reinsurance season, and we're expecting a good year ahead. And I appreciate the time, Chair, and if I can answer any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Cirio, for a wonderful presentation. Members, do you have any questions? Representative Steele, you're recognized.
Thank you, Chair. And thank you for all the data. So much data that it gets confusing. And so I just want to clear my head and see if I understand the data right. On page 3 and 9, I think those are comparable data points. And I just want to know, is the percentage of our policy drop lower risk? And that's why the percentage of increased value is up? So our overall risk is lower, but the risk exposure percentage-wise is higher.
I would say overall this year, because of commercial coming in, the total insured value is I don't want to say it's disproportionately up. I mean, the replacement costs are driving up the total insured value. So that's why you may have if we had a similar number of policies of us at our peak in 2011 compared to now, much higher total insured value now. Does that answer your question? I'm sorry.
No. So if we go to page 3, I think that's just residential.
Yep, my fault. Right here.
Is that just residential?
No, that's everything.
Okay.
That is everything. That is our total policy count and total insured value, commercial and residential combined. That middle section is the residual market level. That's when you would say Citizens was really back in that sweet spot of being the insurer of last resort.
Follow up.
Yeah, just one last. If you could do me a favor and provide me, just on residential, the share of policies we've sold versus the share of policies we still have, and then the percentage change in overall value.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Representative Botano, you recognize?
Thank you, Chair. Mr. Cirio, my district is Fort Myers Beach. We have quite a few condos there.
Yes.
And right now, they're exposed because Citizens won't insure them because they have a part-time or they rent condos out. Can you just elaborate a little bit more on that? Is there anything? Because right now we have one condo that has $25 million of exposure.
Right.
And they're just exposed. There's nothing out there. There's nobody will fund them. Nobody will insure them.
Right. So the
little more. Elaborate on it.
Yes, sir. So the law right now is that if the condo has more than 50% that is not – they don't permanently reside there. It's more, temporary occupancy. They're not eligible. And, of course, the legislature is addressing that. Yes. I'm sorry. But my understanding, there's a bill to address that. You know, my board hasn't taken a position on that. I will say that, you know, there's two competing interests. We need to be there for people who need us when they have nowhere else to go. That is the role of Citizens. But we have to balance that. We do. You all do. Everybody. We have to balance that with the need to be actuarially sound and to be able to pay claims when we need to. So if that restriction is removed, I mean, we'll grow. And it's a policy decision. We will grow. We will still be able to pay claims. Our total insured value will go up significantly. Well, I don't want to say significantly. I don't know the numbers, but it will go up. We are doing an analysis to figure that out. our TIV will increase, as will our policy count.
Representative Stevenson.
Thank you, Chairman. I had a question on the, I don't know what page, I think it's your last page, this one. You said in June there's most of the policies.
That's the renewal period, yes.
Do you have just a rough idea what percentage of the policies renew in June?
I thought it was 60. Do we have that, Christine or Candace, the number of policies that essentially renew in that June timeframe? I thought it was more than half of the market. Yeah, well, Representative, we can get you specifics, but it's the lion's share of policies that renew at that time.
If I may, sure. It's very encouraging. I know there's a number of factors affecting the cost of insurance. Reinsurance stabilizing is a great thing. Reducing excessive litigation helps. And it's not just the litigation cost. It's also the cost of construction tends to drive up. So it's very encouraging. And hopefully we can continue to see more resilient stock.
Well, and it's tough. I'm sorry.
No, I think I'm understanding the issue that Representative Botana, your talk today helped me a little bit. It's the associations that are having trouble getting insurance because of that.
It is. And it's, okay. They're tremendous. Yeah, as Representative Botana pointed out, they're very, very expensive buildings. And if they don't have anywhere else to go, that's an issue. And the whole goal and what you all have been working so hard on are these reforms that will create a healthier private market. The market will continue to recover. There will be insurers interested, especially in the commercial residential. And, again, we've been saying, and many of you all have said as of last year, it's going to take a couple of years. And it's been 1 year, but we are seeing the results.
Yeah. I really appreciate it. It's a very complicated thing. And every time we hear you explain helps me convey, the progress to the public. And I'm sure many people will hear and understand better that we are making progress in this area.
I appreciate the opportunity. It helps me understand it, too, when I explain it again and again and again. They are complicated concepts, all kidding aside, but it's important that, for us, it's been important to be very transparent with the public because the public has cared about insurance rates, and one of the difficult conversations that we have is we have to be there for when people who need insurance have nowhere else to go, we have to be there for them, but we also are not supposed to be the cheapest. In fact, we're supposed to be non-competitive, which means a little more expensive, that true residual insurer. And the other thing to remember is that there are folks, whole wide spectrum of incomes and citizens. It's not just low-income folks. There's a lot of very, very wealthy people with very, very large homes and citizens who are likely paying less than the market. So it's a tough balance.
Representative Woodson, you're recognized.
Thank you, Chair Abbott. Sir, thank you very much for your presentation. You say you bring us some good news, so I appreciate you saying that. But I have my question has to do with, in 2011, Citizens had 23% of the market share. And in 2023, Citizens occupied 17% of the market. Mm-hmm. What would be a fair percentage for the market, the percentage that you are trying to get to, for the market to stabilize in order for the consumers to start seeing some relief? That would be my question.
That's a great question, and it might be sort of a chicken or egg question. I think if the market recovers, our percentage will go down. Our market share will go down because the healthier market, folks will get comparable policies, maybe better coverages, and they'll leave Citizens. So as the market recovers, we would go down. Right now we're 17% and we're at 1.23 million. And if the sweet spot is, half of that, a little less than half of that, 6%. 7%, but ideally, 400 to 600,000 policies. Many, not all. Some people would say it would be great if Citizens did not exist. That there was such a robust market, there was no need for a residual a carrier. Just because of, other folks in the industry would say just because of the makeup of Florida and some of the homes and some of the locations, that probably will never happen. But who knows? But yes, 400 to 600,000.
Follow up. One.
No, one more question. Thank you, Mr. Chair. You also, well, my question, my first question, because we have so many, I have so many seniors in my district who are really crying when it comes to insurance. My second question to you is the removal of the 338,000 policies in the market that you mentioned.
Yes.
Do you have the data for those who were removed from the market but has not been picked up by another insurer?
If it, there, so if you are removed from Citizens, you went somewhere else, right? You got a takeout offer, and you were either ineligible to remain in Citizens because the offer was within 20%, or it was larger and you did not opt to stay in Citizens. And that is something that we have been very conscious of. I know the OIR has too, because we want to make sure that policyholders, and we're trying to tell them, you've got to open your mail. You've got to keep an eye on your email. If you get a takeout offer and you don't respond, if it's above that 20% and you have the option to stay, you need to opt to stay in. You need to let us know. If you don't, you will go with the other carrier. And so we've really increased our messaging, and we're trying to get the word out. You know, and the agents have a responsibility too. The agents have to be communicating. They're made aware of a takeout offer. But to your question, there should never be a scenario where somebody is ineligible for Citizens, but they're not picked up by the other insurer. The only way they have to leave is if another insurer comes in with an offer that's within 20% of the Citizens rate.
Representative Plakin, you're recognized.
Thank you, Chair. Of the total policies that Citizens currently has, are you able to measure what percent of the coverage is wind and what percent is everything else? And if so, do you have a ballpark of that?
Yes, and I don't. We absolutely have that figure. Do we have it handy? Because we can get it to you in minutes. But, yeah, we will get it to you. We absolutely have that data.
Thank you.
Representative Rudman, you're recognized.
Thank you, Chair Abbott, and thank you, Director Cirio, for this update. It certainly sounds promising. You know, to use an analogy, it sounds like the patient is recovering, which is obviously very good. With your permission, I'd like to look back at maybe, I think it was page 4 slide. It's the pie chart slide.
Yes.
So when we look at the latest data there for 2023 and we look at the trends that have occurred, I know the point of this update. I know you're focused on getting that blue pie slice just as small as we could possibly get it. When I look at the trends, you know, going all the way back to 2004, to me, probably the most alarming thing is the trend we see in national carriers and even their subsidiaries. You know, so going back to 2004, when you add the pups and the others, I mean, you're over 60% there. And in 2023, we're not even at 30% there. So I guess my question is, would you be interested in perhaps maybe taking out your crystal ball and give us an idea of what the next year's pie chart, or maybe even next month's pie chart might look like? Is there a way to get the green and the yellow a little bit bigger than it is now?
I mean, only if you let me look in the crystal ball and use the rumor and innuendo. I've heard a lot, you know, and especially at this reinsurance conference I was at. What you hear about the national carriers, even the ones that have recently decided to reduce their writings in Florida, is that it's they want to diversify the portfolio around the country, but that as the market recovers, they are going to consider coming back, and they're keeping an eye on things. So as the market continues to recover, I would say I think there's a very, very good chance that you are going to see more national carriers have an interest, put their toe back in the water, and start to write, as well as the pups.
Follow up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just to follow up on that, Director, so what we see in those pie slices, when we talk about Florida-only subsidiaries, you know, and even the national carriers, they try and reduce their risk by doing that. Mm-hmm. Is that something that's reproduced across the state? Like, in other words, other high-risk states like California, do they experience the same sort of subsidiaries and that sort of thing in an effort to reduce risk?
I mean, my educated guess is yes. I mean, California has a whole host of different but very serious issues than we have. I have heard that some of the carriers that have reduced their footprint here have reduced it in California and in other states. That is what we're hearing. I think that Farmers was in that category, that they reduced their footprint. It wasn't just a Florida thing. It was a national strategy. So I believe that's the case.
Ranking Member Honchowski, you're recognized.
Thank you, Chair. Has Citizens been charging actuarially sound rates?
For the most part, no. There are, it depends on regions, but overall, we could tell you that our we are 30 to 40% below market. And we what we've done, though, Representative, we have asked for maximum rate increases, but we bump up against the glide path. And there are, you know, one of the things that, that you all did last year was non-residential homes are on a I'll call it a different glide path. The increase is different. But yes, the glide path still, it really is, it's a very old policy. It's been on the books for over a decade, but it is an artificial mechanism that is hampering our ability to not compete with the private market.
We'll clarify one thing.
Yes.
You said non-residential. You meant like non-primary?
Non-primary homes, yes. Yes, that's exactly.
Follow-up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Has Citizens historically not been charging actuarially unsound rates?
I don't know historically if we've always asked for the maximum, but we have been, many years ago our rates were frozen. For a couple of years, I think this was in the 08 time frame. 7 until 10, our rates were frozen, which really put us behind the curve. And then the glide path was instituted. But I mean, it is very hard for me to see a situation where, with the glide, with things currently as they stand and the glide path remaining unchanged, where we would ever be able to ask for the increases to get to that actuarially sound point.
Follow up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And can you do me a favor, because I try and talk to residents about this all the time, but would you be able to explain what the risk is to all Floridians, not just the ones on Citizens, but to everybody when Citizens is not charging actuarially sound rates?
So, yes. And let me just throw this out there. My staff and I, we're happy to come visit your districts, talk to your constituents. This is a tough issue. We've been trying to do it. We spent some time in South Florida, Miami-Dade, Monroe, Southwest Florida. We will come and have these conversations. But the risk is this. If we're not charging actuarially sound rates, again, the good news is, because there is this statutory, not authority, but requirement that we levy assessments if our surplus is exhausted, we will always be able to pay claims. So if you're in Citizens, that's great news. The problem is, if we are not charging actuarially sound rates, we don't have the surplus we should have, we're not maximizing that opportunity, you know, if reinsurance is exhausted and claims are exhausted, then as of right now, 83% of Floridians are at risk of getting hit with an emergency assessment. And that is not just on their homeowners, that's on their auto, that's on their jet ski and boats. I mean, everything except for Med-Mal, work comp, federal flood, and federal crop, I believe, is subject to that assessment. And let me back up. The emergency assessment, the risk is to non-citizens customers, but Citizens customers also get hit with that. I'm not trying to sound cavalier. Obviously, even Citizens customers, nobody wants to see a rate increase. But the thought is, most of them are already paying below market. So if there was a small surcharge that hit a policyholder, if they're 30 to 40% below market and they get hit with a 3% surcharge, that's probably not unfair. But it's the risk to the 83% of the private market right now, who are already paying higher rates, have already absorbed more frequent rate increases, and now on top of that, they're going to have a risk of assessment from Citizens. When again, and I apologize, this is not always a great analogy, but Citizens was not created to be sort of a low-income alternative for people. There's some very wealthy people and citizens, and again, folks who have multiple homes. So when you think about that, folks getting hit with an emergency assessment is fundamentally unfair.
We're going to wrap it up with Representative Stevenson and one final question.
Thank you. Since we have you here, and you brought up something that is kind of a new wrinkle for me to understand. Sure. You said that we have a percentage of Florida homes that are just not really insurable.
Right.
I would be interested for you to comment on what those are, and also if that has anything to do with some of the rules we have to prohibit discrimination or limit the ability of an insurance company to deal with the actual risk of certain high-risk properties, which I have heard people refer to as a kind of redlining rule.
Okay.
And that's a new concept. If that's too much, we can talk offline. But if you could just talk about that uninsurable.
I would like to talk offline and sort of do my own homework. But I would say this. There are, and I don't want to just, I don't want to sound like I'm being critical, but there are homes, maybe they're on the coast, and they're just, you know, it's not a risk that somebody wants to take. Maybe it's a mobile home unit in the central part of the state. You know, it depends on the characteristics of the property. And the characteristics of the property is what drives eligibility for citizens, not someone's personal income.
Thank you. I'll look forward to that conversation.
Yes.
I think there's an element of our property insurance rates that may be related to resilience and maybe where things are located. And kind of finding that those repeat damage properties and mitigating that is a fair objective in our overall effort to keep Florida an affordable place for people to live. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Members, thank you. Mr. Sterio, thank you so much for that robust presentation and the questions and answers. I will give you the opportunity, if you would like, for any concluding remarks.
Not at all, other than to say we do appreciate the opportunity to come in. We understand it's a really tough issue for Floridians. The governor's been out there talking about it, the CFO. It's a bipartisan issue. We've had great, frankly, bipartisan support. It's a very tough issue, and we're happy to, like I said, come to your districts and try and explain it as best we can, and we'll be prepared to, you know, maybe dodge some rotten fruit, but it's important. It really is important that we get out there and explain what's going on, and we just thank you for the time.
Thank you. Members, if there is no further business, Representative Keene moves to adjourn. With that, we're adjourned.